This is the third sutta the Buddha ever gave. The first sutta was to those five friends of his. And we went through that. We experienced that same sutta very much like, I keep saying it, very much like those five folks, the first Sangha. Really, the only difference in the, is the teacher, and it's probably was a lot dustier back then than it is here. And then the second sutta was that not self, the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. And the other five, the other four folks awakened when they came to that understanding of what constitutes a self and what doesn't. And so now it's about a month later, and there's 1,000 monks in the Buddha Sangha. I didn't get the beginning part of your question.
I said, hadn't they all left home and gone forth?
Yes, they were all, the six of them, Buddha and the five friends, were wandering around together.
So they had no other than their spiritual distractions, they had nothing else going on.
Yes.
Well,
they basically did what the six of them did, basically the same thing for X number of years. Why are you asking the question, though? I'm curious.
Sometimes the frame of mind. So
they were well focused.
Yeah.
And they had a strong intention to awaken. And they did. You know. Well, after the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, there were now six awakened beings in the world, the Buddha and his five friends. And so now there's 1,000, the word spread pretty quick, and now there's 1,000 monks in the Buddha Sangha. And he now uses the metaphor of this fire-worshipping cult to teach the arising of dukkha to these 1,000 folks. The Buddha presented his first two discourses to the ascetics he had previously befriended. I just said, I'm not going to rehash all that. At that time, in northern India and Nepal, there were various cults who engaged in ritualistic worship, sacrifice, and mystical practices. One of these cults was a popular fire cult devoted to rituals using fire. The Buddha used the fire worshippers as an analogy to show how individual personalities worship what contacts the senses. And worship is just another way of intense desire, craving. And it really is true that we start worshiping these things that we're attracted to. The fire discourse presented here is a brief but insightful look at how the physical senses interpreted by the intellect reinforce the belief in self. Remember that intellect is rooted in what?
Ignorance.
The Buddha was staying in Gaya at Gaya Head with 1,000 monks. There he addressed the monks. Monks! The all is a flame. What all is a flame? The eye is a flame. Forms are a flame. Consciousness at the eye is a flame. Contact at the eye is a flame. And whatever there is that arises in dependence on contact at the eye, experience as pleasure, pain, or neither pleasure nor pain, that too is a flame. What he's saying is that every experience you have from that point of ignorance is a flame with passion, with desire. How are you going to put it out? And he makes the point that the sense organ itself is a flame, and what it leads to is a flame. Pretty powerful metaphor analogy, isn't it?
Meaning eye consciousness, contact.
What? Consciousness. Yes, that consciousness that's attached, that's interpreting what's coming through the eye, is also a flame. So think about that. You're a flame.
And you can't help it, because a flame can only burn what is there. You cannot take that flame off of what's there. I mean, it comes from ignorance. You can only...
Yep. And if you don't do anything to extinguish ignorance, there's nothing to extinguish that flame. So, boy, we're right there. A flame with the fire of passion, the fire of aversion, the fire of delusion. What are the three defilements? Greed, aversion, and deluded thinking. Another word for passion is desire. So he's speaking directly to the three defilements. And it's the three defilements that are resolved or solved when we awaken. We are no longer subject to those, to the three defilements.
Passion, greed, and here
he's saying passion, greed, and deluded thinking. It's usually defined as greed aversion and deluded thinking, the three defilements, but it's the same thing. And really, desire and greed, or desire and aversion, are two sides of the same coin. Aversion is the desire that something not happen or something be different than it is.
Or is it sometimes said as desire, ill will, and deluded?
I've never heard the defilements place defined that way, but maybe. I mean, that certainly could be the same thing. Aversion is ill will is a form of aversion, isn't it? I'm going to go back one line like I always do. A flame with the fire of passion, the fire of aversion, the fire of delusion. A flame, I tell you, with birth, aging, and death, with sorrow, regret, pain, distress, and despair. He's describing dukkha, isn't it? And then he continues. The ear is a flame, and what leads from auditory contact, sounds are a flame. What the sense organ is creating. The nose is a flame, aromas are a flame, the tongue is a flame, flavors are a flame, the body is a flame, tactile sensations are a flame. The intellect is a flame. What does that lead to? Ideas are a flame. I can't even have a thought that's not on fire, that's burning me up. Consciousness at the intellect is a flame. Why don't we give up ignorance? Contact at the intellect is a flame, and whatever there is that arises in dependence on contact at the intellect, experience as pleasure, pain, or neither pleasure nor pain, guess what? That too is a flame. There's no getting away from it. A flame with what? A flame with the fire of passion, the fire of aversion, the fire of delusion, the fire of the defilements. A flame, I say, with birth, aging, and death, with sorrows, regrets, pain, distress, and despair. Seeing thus, the well-instructed disciple of the noble ones grows disenchanted with the eye, disenchanted with forms, disenchanted with consciousness at the eye, disenchanted with contact at the eye, and whatever there is that arises in dependence on contact at the eye, experience as pleasure, pain, neither pleasure nor pain, with that too, they grow disenchanted. So the exact process that inflamed us to one who understands the process, who has put aside ignorance, we're no longer enchanted with that. There's no possibility of becoming inflamed through contact at the eye. Is that clear where the Buddha's going, where I'm going? Pardon me?
Say why that is. Why they're disenchanted? How did they?
Why?
Yes.
Because we are now awakened. There's nothing now when something contacts our senses. I was almost going to get into dependent origination, but I won't. When something contacts our senses, there's no reaction because there's no self-identification. There's no movement in the mind.
And it's also understanding that the form would have excited at one time is not
a true form.
It's just form in that moment.
But yes.
It's not a true thing because it's ever changing.
Yep, foam on the ocean.
Form is not what we think.
Yeah.
It used to be.
There's no self-identity. There's nothing to give rise to fire. There's no fuel for the fire. And that's another metaphor that's used often. There's no sustenance for the fire.
Right,
Jen, you had your hand up?
Yeah, can you, the there was like one sentence, and it was almost the beginning of what you just now read, that ended in from a place of ignorance. This is a flame, that is a flame, from ignorance.
I don't know that that was included in here, but I'll go back one paragraph and see if it was in there. Seeing thus, the well-instructed disciple of the noble ones grows disenchanted with the eye.
No, that's really
before
bad.
That?
Yeah.
A flame with what? A flame with the fire of passion? The fire of aversion? The fire of a delusion? And then I said that's the three defilements again?
Yeah.
A flame, I say, with birth, aging, and death, with sorrow, regrets, pains, distress, and despairs?
It was
the Nagara Sutta. We'll go back.
I don't need to hear the whole thing. I just want to hear that part that ends in ignorance again, because it was.
Well, I think
ear consciousness, eye consciousness.
Oh yeah, that's when I asked.
From ignorance.
The body's a plain tactile sense. Well, I went through that list and I concluded with consciousness at the intellect is a flame. Contact at the intellect is a flame, and whatever there is that arises in independence on contact at the intellect, experienced as pleasure, pain, or neither pleasure nor pain, that too is a flame?
No, I would think that if you worshipped flame and you heard that all of those things were flame, you'd be like, yeah, everything is a flame. This is good.
Well, but again, he's using the metaphor of them. They are, they're fire worshippers, and look what happens when you worship. And he's making the connection that we worship those things that create, that we desire. We create a type of worship, and that's really what we do.
I guess the what I heard for the first time, because I've listened to this quite a few times, and every time I have this little piece of resistance to the idea that, you know, everything's a flame, like there's just no hope, like everything's just burning up, like why? But there was a piece in there that said, when it's from ignorance, when you're in ignorance, all of those things are a flame.
Well, that part of it I added, the word ignorance, because...
So that's what I didn't... So thank you for adding that.
You're welcome. And again, that's that... And the overarching theme of our retreat is to be empty of ignorance. That's the true meaning of emptiness. And again, that's exactly what the Buddha's pointing out here. Look what happens when we're not empty of ignorance. Our whole lives are lives that we're burning ourselves up with this passion, with this desire, with the defilements.
I'll stop torturing him.
No, thank you. I mean, that's why we're doing this.
So the only thing that can be defiled is self-referential.
Yeah, nothing.
Yeah.
But again, because we take things personally, it feels like everything. You know, that's why it's so hard. But the reinforcement is to remember, there's nothing here. This is not me. This is not mine. Go back one sutta ago and 2,600 years ago. This is not me. This is not mine. The things that are giving this rise to this passion, this is not me. This is not mine. When something contacts the eye sense and we're so attracted to it, we have to have it. Wait a minute. This is not me. This is not mine. I don't need to identify with this. I don't need it at all. And you still may have it, but you don't need it. And give me a second to find my place again. I'm going to go back to the end of that. Well, wait a minute. No, I think I found my place. Back one paragraph. Seeing thus, the well-instructed disciple of the noble ones grows disenchanted with the eye, disenchanted with forms. I don't think I read that before, did I? Anyway. Seeing thus, the well-instructed disciple of the noble ones grows disenchanted with the eye, disenchanted with forms, disenchanted with consciousness at the eye, disenchanted with contact at the eye, and whatever there is that arises in dependence on contact at the eye, experienced as pleasure, pain, or neither pleasure nor pain, with that too he grows disenchanted. He grows disenchanted with the ear. He grows disenchanted with the nose. Let me say it this way. They grow disenchanted with the tongue, and they grow disenchanted with the body. They grow disenchanted with the intellect. disenchanted with ideas, disenchanted with consciousness at the intellect, and disenchanted with contact at the intellect. What's contacting the intellect is the sense organs that are feeding the intellect. Everything rooted in ignorance. And now, because we understand that there's nothing there except dukkha, we grow disenchanted with it. Those things that are that at once we thought we needed to be happy, to survive, to be safe, we grow disenchanted because we realize that's the trap. We're no longer enchanted by it. The end of ignorance, the end of compulsive, that type of compulsive thinking. The Buddha continues, and whatever there is that arises in dependence on contact at the intellect, experienced as pleasure, pain, or neither pleasure nor pain, he grows disenchanted with that too. Disenchanted, he becomes dispassionate. The word there really refers to not taking things personal anymore, doesn't it? And it relates directly to the metaphor. Disenchanted, he becomes dispassionate. Through dispassion, he is fully released. With fully released, there is the knowledge. Fully released, you know it. It's not fooling yourself by saying, I think I awakened yesterday. He discerns that birth is ended. The well-integrated life fulfilled. The task is done. There is nothing further for this world. That is what the Blessed One said. Gratified, the monks delighted at his words, and while this explanation was being given, the hearts and mind of 1,000 monks, through no clinging, not being sustained, is a better way of saying it, were fully released from the fermentations and the effluence. We were talking about that yesterday. They awakened. Did you yet? Are you awakened? In the book, there's more to it, but you can read that on your own. So what do you think? Do you see how it fits in? How it follows? Do you see how this is one of the most important suttas, along with the other two?
Just to go back to the sense part, I mean, we've heard it as the sense gates before, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you think about behind your gate, you know, you're guarding your gate now with knowledge, wisdom, instead of ignorance, so nothing's going to get through, right?
Yep. That's the right word. Guarding your sense gates, practicing restraint. You know?
The things still go through the gate. You are, however, aware of them.
Right.
You don't allow them to make an admission.
Dispassion. They don't get to the personalization state. Mm-hmm. It's just arising.
Yeah. That's right.
It just passes away.
Because he never says, for instance, not to look at.
No.
He
doesn't in any way say that you should not be involved in the world.
And he never says that you're not going to. It's like you're the thing that's changing.
That's right.
It's not the world around you. You're the thing that's changing.
Yeah.
So things are still going to come your way. It's how you respond to it.
Yes, the first noble truth states that dukkha occurs. It doesn't say that it stops when you awaken. It just says that you will no longer be affected by it. That leads to the importance of understanding what karma and rebirth means. And what he just said there's no more further becoming, meaning in this life, in this human life, there's no more further becoming of experiences rooted in ignorance, and there's no more further becoming, there's no more momentum to drive another birth that is prone to sickness, aging, suffering, and death. You've ended dukkha. And for the rest of this life, you'll live with an everlasting mind of equanimity. You know, you could say that the real reward of awakening is that you get to live in peace for the rest of this life. Don't anybody ask, well, what then? The world is not something I read.
Yeah. And the world is no more.
At the end of the sutta?
This is no more, not born again into this world.
Well, that's the Karaniya Metta Sutta. That.
But that means there is no self-identification that's going to be experienced.
Yes, when I.
So this being will still continue in the world, but it's not going to be seeing things with deluded self-referential.
He says this often in slightly different words. Birth is ended. It's usually written as the holy life fulfilled. I prefer to say the integrated life, meaning the life that integrated with the Eightfold Path, because the Buddha wasn't teaching a religion either, and holy usually means religion, but it really just means holistic, doesn't it? Well integrated. The well integrated life fulfilled, the task is done. The task, meaning the task of awakening, is done. And then he concludes that is there is nothing further for this world. Again, there's nothing further that can give rise to any kind of suffering. That's what we're talking about. Again, remember the context. There's nothing further. So he's not talking about individual annihilation. What he's talking about is the cessation, as described in the third and fourth noble truth, the cessation of suffering. And again, remember that the dukkha in the world continues. We're just no longer contributing to our own confusion, delusion, and suffering. And we will still feel those things that in the past we might have associated with suffering, such as sadness or grief, or maybe even fear. You know, that question was asked at the first retreat. Well, what happens? I think it was this sutta. Maybe it was the Anattalakkhana Sutta, the teaching on no self. And the misunderstanding is that you shouldn't act in any way that has any type of self in it. And so the question was asked, what do you do if you're standing on the train tracks and the train is coming at you? Take two steps to the right. You don't need to prove how awakened you are by getting hit by a train. You know, what good is it? Run over by a cow.
Was the Sabba Sabba Sutta after this one? Because
it had to be well after it, because this was the third sutta he ever gave.
Because it said fermentations. You mentioned fermentations.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I mean, and that's talk about repetitive. That's the common theme. Always referring back to the fermentations, the three defilements, the three marks of existence. If you're studying the Buddha's Dhamma, you're basically studying half a dozen subjects, maybe eight, over and over again. In different applications. And now remember, he said he gave 84,000 discourses. That number just means a lot, a whole lot. But every one of those discourses, every one of those teachings was in the context of Four Noble Truths, always referring back to the Four Noble Truths, with the underlying theme of dependent origination, five clinging aggregates, etc., etc. You know, the three marks of existence. They're always referred to in some way in everything that he was teaching. In this way, he's referring directly to dukkha, but he's also indirectly talking about the five clinging aggregates, the three defilements, the effluence is mentioned here.
Is there fermentations? Are there like a certain number of fermentations? Or just
well, they're mentioned in different ways, but you can always come back to the three defilements of greed, aversion, and deluded thinking, because that's what gives rise to all of the fermentations. I mean, think about the word fermentation.
Your brain.
You're feeding something. You're putting yeast and sugar on the pile of, if I use the metaphor, the pile of dung that you're thinking rooted in ignorance. And all it can do is continue to ferment.
The mental compost.
It's what?
The mental compost.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is. Excuse me for using that word, dung heap. Should we haven't yet. Let's just go around the room, I'm going to say, let's save it for later, for downstairs, and let's talk about what we've had this week. I want to get off the teacher chair for a little while and just have a conversation, if that's okay. Okay. So, but are there any questions or comments about where we've come so far this weekend?